On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I am joined by the elegant and intelligent Danny Wexelman, who is pinch potting for Jordan Schusterman. We chat about Clayton Kershaw announcing his retirement, the Cubs securing a playoff spot for the first time since 2020. Are the Guardians really going to sneak into the playoffs here? And then, of course, a good, bad, and ugly that includes the challenging of a shift play. If that doesn't get you fired up, I don't know what will. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Clayton Kershaw should just go hit now. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Danny Wexelman. And if Shohei Ohtani can do it, why can't Kersh?
That period. We're done, right? That's it. This is over. I think you're supposed to say hi first. Hi. I know you know how to host a podcast. Hi. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me be here. I have big shoes to fill. One Jordan Schusterman's shoes, by the way. I don't know what size he is, actually, but I know
that. I can tell you he's got a big head. You really have a big hat to fill. In fact, you have a big, like, 100 different hats to fill, as we know about Jordan's insane hat collection. Danny, thank you for filling in. Jordan Schusterman, I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know. I know he's off today. I don't know why. He probably told me I'm a bad friend. I didn't listen. And you are here to pinch hit. Danny, before we begin the podcast, what do you do for work? Introduce yourself.
I have a lightsaber here and I have a banner. Remember these? You probably used to put these on your wall at home. And I have this jersey that I wore. I work in baseball. Let's see.
You work in baseball. Wow.
I work in baseball, everybody. For those of you watching on YouTube,
you can see she's got a light stick.
I speak for a living. That's what I do. I work in baseball. Yeah.
Danny, you do a number of things for your job. You are a very talented, diverse individual. Your work includes ESPN, SiriusXM, SNY. You are the sideline reporter for the Men's Collegiate World Series, which is rad. You are a broadcaster. You are a legend of great renown. And I sincerely appreciate you hopping on the show with me today.
This is my honor. How cool is this? I mean, we just said it a minute ago before we hopped on that you and I have almost known each other for a decade. And you have your own show. You and Jordan have grown. You've both grown individually.
Thank you.
You've both gotten married, which is mind-blowing to me. You beat me to the punch there. And here you are asking me to come on your show. And I am stoked. I feel like this is going to be so amazing. And I'm very excited to talk ball with you. And I hope that it lives up to the hype and the expectations, because otherwise I'm going to crawl in a hole and I'm never going to come back.
I think you'll be okay. You've known me for a decade. I haven't even known myself for a decade. Speaking of someone who's been around for at least a decade, our opener today is Clayton Kershaw saying goodbye. The news trickled out yesterday afternoon. Clayton Kershaw, as he said, guys, I'm calling it, which is an incredible way to hang up the spikes. The same phrasing used when you're out at the bar with your pals and it's sleepy time. Guys, I'm going to call it. And Clayton Kershaw is doing the same on what has been a Hall of Fame career. He held a press conference yesterday at Dodger Stadium to address the media, in which he teared up multiple times, which we love seeing men cry. More crying in baseball is a good thing. He will make his final start at home in the regular season tonight against the San Francisco Giants. And it has been one heck of a run for Clayton Kershaw.
So many emotions. I watched this morning, actually, him read the letter that Ellen wrote, his wife. We know her, right? We don't even have to really explain who she is. She's, as she said, perched up in the stands, cleaning diapers, pulling magic tricks out of her bag to entertain her children while they learn about baseball and watch their dad play Major League Baseball and win multiple Cy Youngs and take over the world and win a World Series and do the most incredible things that you can literally do on a Diamond First Ballot Hall of Famer. My favorite thing about Clayton Kershaw, actually two things. Number one is, if we're going to be serious for a moment, is his adaptability. You're talking about a guy who has learned year after year after year how to stay relevant in baseball with his pitches and get guys out. I know the 3,000th strikeout, we were all waiting for it. He was like, let's get this over with. And, he, you know, you're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And for him to sustain in baseball, especially the way it's changed so much, like, I tip my cap to you, Mr. Kershaw. And then number two, his love affair with Skechers and the fact that he embraces his dad swag. Like, hail, all hail to Skechers for creating this moment for us to appreciate Clayton Kershaw in a dad light, not just a baseball player light, but a dad light.
I don't know if it's so funny you bring up Skechers, and we could do a small Skechers tangent here.
Yeah.
I believe that there are five active players sponsored by Skechers.
No, not that many. No way.
If four or five.
Are they dads?
And they're all exactly who you'd think. It is Kershaw, Aaron Nola, Chris Taylor, Brendan Donovan, and I believe Lance Lynn, who has since retired. Those are the five. And it's just like big bearded, chunky white dads. And it's like, you know what? freaking nailed it. Like, great job, Skechers.
Great branding.
In reviewing Clayton Kershaw's career, as I see it, there are kind of like four blocks, right? Comes up in 2008 as a 20-year-old. He does like he does 100 innings of being fine, you know? And it's like, there's potential here. He's walking a lot of guys. He's basically walking like 52 walks in 107 innings. He's still learning the limbs and where they're supposed to go. He's a baby. He's a baby deer. The curveball is amazing, but he's fine. 2009, as a 21-year-old, he puts it together, 170, one innings, 2.79 ERA. But because he went 8-8, no Cy Young votes, because that's how life worked in 2009. And then from 2010 to 2017, he puts together one of the most dominant pitching runs in the history of the sport. Across that span, he starts 239 games and has a 2.20 ERA, going 131-51, racking up enough wins for people to really respect him, striking out 1,835 hitters over those 16-56 innings. And it's like an MVP award, three Cy Youngs, two other runner-up finishes, a third-place finish and a fifth-place finish, all-star games in all those seasons. And like, Dan, like, your personal experience of watching Clayton Kershaw, like, where were you in your life for that chunk of time where he was the no doubt best pitcher on the planet?
That's a great question. I love that question. I was starting my career. So I had just moved to New York. I had graduated, moved to New York, and didn't know what the heck I was doing. But all I knew is I love the sport. I want to immerse myself in this sport. And the year that he won the Cy Young and an MVP, 2014, was my first year at MLB.com. My first year working there, my first year understanding that this baby tadpole wants to literally devote my life to being a part of this space. And I'm like, give me more. How much more baseball can I get? And Clayton Kershaw was at the center of all of it. He's all we talked about. He's all we thought about. Watching him was amazing. And the fact, again, like, look across the decades of which he pitched, right? He's pitching in 2010, right? 2009 to now 2025. So you have two different versions of the game. The game when he was coming up, when he was pitching and achieving those things, was much different. And arguably, it's harder when you get older. The game is so much different than it was when he first started. But yeah, I was just starting my career. And so what a treat for me, right? I didn't grow up in the 80s. I barely grew up in the 90s. Yeah, I know. I know. There's a Twitter search, or not a Twitter search. There's a Google search of how old I am. It's really good. There's a lot. People want to know if I'm married, if you how like old type I am.
In, if you type in Danny Wexelman, yes, in like press space, it'll yes. say like Danny Wexelman, how old? Danny Wexelman, husband?
Married, husband. Yes, there's That's... all you know. People are curious, so let me tell you, I'm not that old, but okay, I'm okay. old enough to appreciate the legend. And yeah. again, for me, like my favorite thing about a guy is how do you adapt? How do you continue to stay in this game? His family yeah. is growing. The Dodgers are changing. And all he wants is a ring. All we talk about is the ring for Clayton Kershaw. When will he get the ring? You have your Cy Youngs. You have an MVP and you don't have yeah. a World Series yet. So it was special.
So that's kind of part of the story I'm going down. But like first, when we talk about how long he's been around.
Yeah.
As a rookie, teammates with a 40-year-old Jeff Kent.
Yeah.
40-year-old okay? Jeff Kent. Played against his the first batter he ever faced. Do you know who it was?
No.
Friend of the program, Skip Schumacher.
No!
First guy he ever faced was Skip. I've talked to Skip about it. It's a great story. Okay?
Okay.
Skip has since gone on to be a big league coach, big league manager.
Yeah.
Jeff Kent. His son yes. is, I believe, now in the Yankees organization.
Caden Kent.
Caden yeah. Kent, who is with Texas A&M. Yeah. And Skip's son is getting ready. I believe he's in next year's draft and is getting ready to go play at TCU.
Yes.
Like, Kershaw has been around. It has been a long time. So he has this run. 08 to 17. Really, you could stretch it to 19 if you wanted. And during that time, the Dodgers are just leaning on him in the playoffs, yeah. right? At the beginning of his career, the Dodgers are this mess of a franchise where the McCourt family, who owns the team, they go bankrupt. There's a messy divorce. They sell to the Guggenheim money bag partners, and everything changes. By 2019, though, he doesn't have a ring. They're bringing him back on short rest. He's given up, you know, soul-crushing home runs to Matt Adams in the playoffs. Shout out Big City. And it's like, that is the narrative about Kershaw. It's that he's a choker. It's that he'll never get his ring. And that burden is, you know, friend of the program, Andy McCullough, wrote so beautifully in his biography of Clayton that everyone should go read.
Yes.
That burden weighed on him, right? And you could feel it. And in the article Andy wrote this morning, there was just a great quote from Kershaw in there. You do not know the burden you carry. Because at some point, you just get used to the weight on your shoulders.
That's Are you trying to make me cry this morning?
I mean, like, that's great. That's from Kershaw, not Andy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If Andy wrote that, I'd be like, well, yeah, he's a professional writer.
I have tears in my eyes. Can you see? Can you see?
You just get used to the weight on your shoulders. And then everything changes. In 2020. Everything changes in 2020. Not sure if you heard about that. The Los Angeles Dodgers win the World Series. That season, Kershaw, during the regular season, is a 2-1-6, because of course he does, and they win. And now they don't get the parade, and it's a, you know, weird season, because the panorama.
Oh, that
but
thing.
Kershaw yeah. gets his ring.
He finally gets the ring. He does the thing that all we do, especially in the media, is
ring.
We go round and round on the freaking carousel about it. You gotta have a ring. You gotta have it to solidify, blah, blah, blah. And he does it. And people argue that it was easier. And you can make the argument that it was harder because it was the pandemic. It was the pandemic. Okay. Like, there was nothing easy about what was accomplished that year.
And I think it's important to point out that in like 18, 19, or maybe it was in 17, he herniates a disc in his back.
Yeah.
And that changes what he's able to do as a pitcher. He needs to alter the stuff a little bit. He's not throwing nearly as hard. And yet, even when Clayton Kershaw was bad in that later stage of his career, okay, from 20 onward, he wasn't that bad since 2020. Okay. A 2.92. He has ERA under 3. Now, if you want to go back to 2021, he has a 3.01. Like, the bat, Clayton Kershaw could go roll his ass out there next year and be a decent pitcher. This year, in his reduced state, he has a 3.53 in 102 innings. All right. Danny, he's going to finish the year with the second most innings on the 2025 Dodgers, a team that has spent more money on baseball players than any team in the history of the sport. And they're like, oh, well, Clayton, could you just keep throwing for us?
Well, is it not the most poetic thing you've ever seen actually in baseball? The fact that this is your franchise player. This is the guy that you put everything on. You put your burdens on his shoulders and he wore it and he did his, he left everything on the field. You know that felt that. I can't even imagine the relief in 2020. And for him this season to be the guy, he's been the guy. He weathered the storm for them. He was Mr. Consistent, right? This is what it takes to be a Hall of Famer. It's not just every other number and stat and being consistently great, right? It's not the Hall of Good.
Yeah.
Being consistently great. And on top of it, you're carrying your team. You're actually a legitimate pitcher this season, not just being inserted where you can and dealing with X, Y, and Z. Like, you are bona fide this year. And that to me, like, that's guts. That's literally everything that matters in baseball. And they have him to thank. That's poetic.
And I think that him choosing to go out now is fascinating. And after this discussion, we'll take a little break. So after 2023, he thinks about hanging him up, right?
Yeah.
But he wants to do like one more playoff run. He wasn't happy with how that ended. After last year when they win, he's thinking about hanging him up again. But last year was probably Kershaw's worst season. Throws only 30 innings, is dealing with a toe injury, has a 4-5, is a non-factor down the stretch.
Yeah.
And he wanted to just prove to himself that he could do it one more time. And he gets healthy and he's effective this year. He's not embarrassing. Like, there were moments over the last couple of years where we were like, this guy's cooked. You remember after he faces the Diamondbacks in the NLDS in 2023 and gets clobbered.
Yeah, they owned him.
Right.
They owned him. He didn't even look like a shell of himself.
Christian Walker literally gave him a swirly, you know, and he was able to come back from that and contribute one final season. The final accolades, the resume here, first ballot Hall of Famer, no questions asked. 80.5 career BWAR, 2,844 two-thirds innings, 2.54 ERA for his career, and 449 starts with 3,039 strikeouts. NL MVP in 2014. We don't have pitchers winning MVPs nowadays. Ohtani, different deal.
No.
Three Cy Youngs, 11, 13, and 14. 11 All-Star games, including the one this year, which I'm happy he got to go to as a thanks for the memes honorific, you know, wave to the crowd. 5 ERA titles, one of the best pitchers of all time and the best pitcher of a generation. He will have a statue outside Dodger Stadium one day. The number will get retired. It will be all the things that he deserves. Danny, before we take a break, anything else you'd like to say about Clayton, middle name? Oh, I should know this.
Michael?
Clayton Allen? Clayton John. Edward. Ah, Clayton
Edward. Edward. Oh, I should have known that. Edward. Yeah. Yes, I do have one more thing. I don't think we'll ever fully appreciate what he did. I think it's so hard, especially right now with how quickly the world turns. But the fact that we got, we call him Vintage Kersh, right? We got this guy that you're not going to see this as much anymore. This is not the way the game is going. This is something to treasure. And so again, like, you look at the body of work and you think about Sandy Koufax, the guy who taught him, right? Taught him how to be this way, how to do these things. And Kersh is in a box of his own. And so I just don't know if we'll ever appreciate really what he did or how he did it. But we'll do our best. We'll do our best. And you are lifting him up. Everyone's going to lift him up. But I'm just glad that we lived when he pitched.
Yeah, we got to see this. And, you know, you make a great point. The name of Andy McCullough's awesome biography about Clayton Kershaw is the last of his kind. Right. And that is, in a way, what he signifies as a starting pitcher in an era as the game has changed around him. Tune in tonight, everybody. Kershaw's final regular season home start. Who knows what type of impact they'll have on the Dodgers as they, you know, claw their way into the playoffs. But he will throw tonight one final time at home. It's going to be awesome. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we will talk about the Chicago Cubs clinching a playoff spot. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Danny Wexelman, pinch running, pinch potting for Jordan Schusterman. Pinch running is a fun transition to our next segment, which is, did you know that Billy Hamilton is currently in AAA with the Cubs, like running around just in case they want to put him on the playoff roster?
Go,
that's
Billy.
Cool as hell.
Go, Billy. Keep,
run, Billy, run.
Hell yeah.
The Chicago Cubs clinched a playoff spot, and that is something that we need to talk about. This happened earlier this week. I believe it was on Wednesday afternoon. The Cubs topping the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pittsburgh at PNC Park to clinch a playoff spot. Obviously, the Brewers have the NL Central wrapped up. The Cubs sneakily, though, currently 88-65, have, I think, the fifth best record in baseball behind the Brewers, Phillies, Blue Jays. That is the fourth best record. Good math, Jake.
Good job.
In many other divisions, they would be division champs. They now have a 9-game lead in the wild card. Like, they've had this wrapped up for some time.
Yes.
But this has been quite a season for the Chicago Cubs, reaching the playoffs where they belong. It is their first playoff appearance since the shortened 2020 season. The first playoff appearance under Jed Hoyer, I believe, their current president of baseball operations. He might have taken over in 2020 or before 2020. But this is like the first time a team that he built reached the playoffs. When you go back and you look at the, like, it all starts in 2016, right? Like, Cubs win the World Series in 2016. Oh my God, what is this timeline that we're living in? And then that core, like, disintegrates slowly over time. They lose in the NLCS the following year. They lose in the wild card game the following year on the Tony Walters hit the Rockies. Walters. Remember the Rockies win the playoffs?
Yes.
Kids,
yes.
It did happen, I promise. Don't make the playoffs in 19. Make it in 20. Do you remember what happened to them in 20? In the playoffs?
No. Remind me.
To the Marlins. They lose 2 games to the Fightin' Fish in Wrigley. And the Marlins are like smoking cigars in the dugout in Wrigley and call themselves bottom
feeders. I also blacked
that
out. The Cubs and me blacked that out.
The following season of 2021, they enter trying to be good and like they sell off at the deadline.
Yeah.
That's Rizzo. That's Baez. That's Bryant. And in that moment, you're like, wow, they are readying to be bad. And they were certainly bad. The next couple of years, they make some cute runs in 2023 and 2024 with late season tumbles down the standings. This year, they put it all together. They are going to win 90 games. They're going to host in the playoffs. Congratulations to the Cubs, to all the Cubs fans. Danny, as a St. Louis kid, what do you think about this Cubs team in 2023?
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly not thinking about the St. Louis Cardinals. There's not much to think about there back in St. Louis, my hometown. First of all, October and Chicago and Wrigley go hand in hand. The postseason is already good. It's even better now. That's number one. Congratulations. Like, that you make the postseason great by hosting baseball. So that's my first point. My second point is this is a team that's so fun to watch, but somehow has become forgotten. Like, at first we weren't talking about Milwaukee enough. Now I feel like you have the Phillies and the Dodgers and the Padres and the Mets hanging on to the wild card, but more importantly, Milwaukee. Milwaukee, who's a bona fide World Series contender, in my opinion. And so Chicago's just lost. Like, no one is paying attention to this team. Also, because technically in the second half, they have stunk it up. It is true. They have. Somehow, though, They haven't relinquished their wild card spot. So even if they've struggled in the second half, even if Pete Crow Armstrong hasn't been himself and Seiya Suzuki and the Kyle Tucker drama that's been going on, those guys haven't been themselves, they still haven't wavered in their wild card spot. So that tells me, and I think the NL is much more fascinating than the AL, that tells me that the bones of this team, the foundation of this team, which Jed Hoyer built, the bones are strong. The starting pitching has gotten better. Cade Horton, hello. Wow. Unbelievable what he's done, right? Matthew Boyd, who I know has struggled a little more in the second half, still been really good this season. Jameson Taillon, who's coming along right now. There's a lot to love about this team. So to see Chicago back in the postseason, I think is a huge deal. And also, do you think Craig Counsell probably had a little sigh of relief after last year, right? He comes over from Milwaukee. He's supposed to save the Cubs. And it doesn't work. In fact, it's a crash and burn last year. And so this year, I saw him talking. I think they were in Cincinnati. He said that, you know, the old guys went home early. The young guys stayed out to party. And I bet he's never been happier to say a sentence like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have, you say Chicago in October. Yeah. The first World Series game I ever got to cover was Wrigley. I'm holding up the credential right now for those of you watching on YouTube, little baby Jake. Wrigley in 2016, game 3, 4, and 5 was, you know, unforgettable and made me realize I wanted to do this forever. The most enduring memory actually from that, because remember the Cubs lose 3 and 4 at home.
Yeah.
And they go down 3-1.
Dramatic.
In game 4, Jason Kipnis hit a homer.
Yes.
To put the now Gardos up by a comfortable margin that silenced the joint. Like, it was pin drop territory. That's what I remember more, because the rousing comeback happens in Cleveland, where I was not there. But you're right. As cold as it is, Wrigley in October is where it's at. This Chef's season kiss. Has been very bizarre for the Cubs, right? It's been like 2 seasons. In the first half, the pitching, specifically the bullpen, is a disaster class. Like, they're just coughing up runs, particularly in April, but they're the best offense in the league.
Yeah.
Right? In the first half.
Yeah.
PCA breakout, Kyle Tucker going ham. You have Carson Kelly, like, looking like Johnny Bench. You know, they are...
Suzuki was really good.
Suzuki was really good. Horner was playing well. Michael Bush was hitting. It was like, this is the best offense in the league. Second half of the season, offense takes a big leap back. Okay, Suzuki gets cold. PCA tumbles. Dansby doesn't really... He's just, like, fine the whole time. And Carson Kelly, understandably, comes back to earth a little bit. But instead, what happens in August and September is that the starting pitching, out of nowhere, kind of, just catches fire. And that is specifically true in regards to Cade Horton. Cade Horton, we have talked a little bit about on the show. Cade Horton, who I think should be the rookie of the year. Ooh. Cade Horton has, like, been the best pitcher in baseball in the second half. Danny, you covered Cade Horton. I did. College World Series when he was at the University of Oklahoma in 2022. Tell people a little bit about the pitcher he was at the time and his journey from there to where he's at now.
Yeah, and fact check me on this. So Cade missed a good chunk of time at Oklahoma. Yes. A good chunk of time. Yes, and so you don't have as much then development, right? You just naturally, you're missing the season, which is shorter, and you don't have a chance to grow up as much. You choose to go to college either because you don't get drafted high enough, you don't have any other options, or you want to develop, right? Yeah. And for Cade Horton to choose Oklahoma and want to work with Skip Johnson, who does one of the best jobs in college baseball, developing not only players, but pitchers in particular. His last season there, when they went to Omaha, this was a kid who was probably going to go somewhere in the first 3-4 rounds, maybe. And he gets to Omaha, Nebraska, and
good
he
town.
Flashes.
Great town.
Good town. Great place. Good sushi. He flashes a new pitch that he had learned, I don't know, 3 weeks before.
Yeah.
He's using it in the postseason for the first time. I want to say, please tell me it was his changeup. I'm going to double check my notes in a second, but he had just learned it and he flashes it. He was unbelievable in the Men's College World Series. And he made himself so much dang money. It's the same as Gage Wood for Arkansas this year. You have a performance like that on a stage like that. Cade Horton is such a wonderful, wonderful human being. And again, when you miss so much time in college, it's tough. Like, think about when you were in college and you were a kid. Jake, you're excluded from this because you played. But you were just going to college and maybe you had one hard week or maybe, you know, maybe you got an F on one test and then you bounce back the next week and you're going to classes. If you miss a good chunk of the season, if you miss an entire season when you're an athlete, that can be so detrimental. And he didn't let anything stop him for coming back. And this is who Cade Horton can be. And I'm so happy for him.
So I got an article in front of me.
Tell me.
Written by, I think this is Yake Mintz, formerly of Fox Sports.
Is that your cousin?
My cousin, Yake. I was behind the dish for the start in Omaha. Snuck down to the scout seats for the start where Cade Horton made $1 million or whatever.
Yes.
In the postgame media conference, this is from Mintz. Mintz writes, in the postgame media conference, Horton revealed that he learned the grip for his slider.
Ooh, slider,
only
there it
5 weeks ago. Now it will almost certainly make him a millionaire. So like he was out for the first half of the season, comes back and is just dominant down the stretch, shoots up draft boards. Cubs take him in, I believe, sixth, maybe seventh overall. And he has been the real freaking deal. Now, the one thing in regards to Cade Horton and the whole Cubs staff going forward.
Yeah.
They, like, okay, so Cade Horton is currently at 115 innings, right? He came up this season. He threw last year. Do you know how many innings he threw last year, Danny?
No.
34. Ooh. Year before that, in 2023, he threw 88. So he has already blown past his career high in innings and blown past his number of last year.
You concerned?
I'm concerned. Like, here's why I'm concerned. Not from an injury or a stamina perspective, more from like how do the Cubs handle him in October? Like if he's cruising through five, are they going to let him throw a sixth? Are they going to let him throw a seventh even? Or are they going to have to go to that bullpen earlier in the same way that like the Dodgers are going to limit Otani's innings? That's my concern. And that's my concern with the rest of the staff as well, where, you know, you mentioned Matthew Boyd, what a season for him. Now, he's 34 years old and you're not.
Watch your mouth.
You know, he's 34 years old and you're not going to like monitor his innings because you're worried about the rest of his career.
Right.
In that regard. But he has thrown 174 innings this year. Last year, 39. Year before that, 71. Year before that, 13. Year before that, 78. Year before that, 60. Okay. Matthew Boyd is like, that's where I'm worried about the stamina.
Matthew Boyd
thing.
Is tired. I guarantee he's tired right now.
He needs some Z's, brother. And so, like, that's the Cubs rotation in October, right? Yeah. Those are the guys probably starting games one and two. You probably would throw Imanaga.
Yeah. And Tyone eventually will get a start. He's not going to be your first three starts. Here's a little thing to remember, too, is that over the last couple of years, the average innings for starters have declined, right?
Sure.
4 1/3, I believe, was the average last postseason. 4 1/3.
Wow.
So if you said, hey, I only need you to go five, and then he doesn't even go five, that's the average, right? But that also requires you to have a lockdown bullpen. That is a part of the equation here. But starters on average aren't going that deep into the postseason. The stakes are too high. The moments, the leverage is way too high. The managers don't feel comfortable letting their starter see that lineup one more time. And so they're going to their bullpen sooner. And so I think I hear your concerns. I'm concerned too, but I feel like, I don't know, they feel like they're kind of turning a corner here in the last few weeks. They're becoming a little bit better. I think I'm concerned, honestly, more about the offense right now. Like, Nico Horner's a guy we're not talking enough about. He is offensively the best second baseman on Fangraphs WAR in the league. He's number one. Yes. But Pete obviously has struggled down the stretch here, right? The home runs he put up in the first half, he put up How many home runs did he have? He had 25 home runs in the first half. He's got, what are my notes here? 4 in the second half. Okay. Suzuki only has 2 in the second half. Kyle Tucker now dealing with the calf strain. That's an issue, right? If we're getting serious business here. In the second half, the starters have been better. The relief pitchers have been average. They don't have Justin Steele. That's a part of it, too. I kind of forgot
that's
about
a big deal.
Him.
Yeah, it's
a big deal. They've done all this without who they thought was going to be their ace. But the offense, like, I'm a little concerned about what will they provide in October.
Two more things about the Cubs, and we'll chat about the Gardos. Their deadline to me was such an embarrassment. Because they needed a starter. Now, I know the starting pitching market didn't actualize in the same way, in the way people expected it to. But every year it feels like a couple of starters that start playoff games get traded, and they should have been more aggressive in getting a Shane Bieber or a Merrill Kelly or someone that they could trust starting a playoff game. They needed that type of player, and they were too passive. And for me, that doesn't make sense if you have Kyle Tucker for 1 year. He's probably leaving, right? This, you went for it. If you went for it, go for it. And so I'm curious to see if that does come back to haunt them. But the one thing I want to end on is Ian Happ. Ian Happ is one of my favorite dudes in baseball. Ian Happ, who has been amazing, team's best hitter in the second half. Ian Happ, who is the longest tenured Cub, who comes up in 2017. Okay, I think this is important. Okay. He comes up and debuts in the afterglow of 2016. He is not there when they win the World Series. He's not on the
club. Good point.
He comes up the following year and is part of the disintegration. He's playing with Baez and Wilson Contreras and Rizzo and Bryant and all that whole group, Schwarber. He's on those teams, but he doesn't have the ring. They all leave because he's a little bit younger. He stays. And he endures the fallow period. He is on some bad Cubs teams. And, you know, Ian Happ is not an MVP candidate. He's a 120 OPS plus guy with good defense in a corner. He's like a 3.5 win player, great player. And he did an interview with friend of the program, Taylor McGregor, after they clinched.
Lover.
Where he's like tearing up. And Taylor's like, what does this mean that you got to catch the last out? To clinch this, to get you guys back to the playoffs. And he's like, you know, it's all just hitting me right now. And that's awesome, man. I love when players get rewarded for their loyalty. Mm. Now, the money helps. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I'm very, very happy for Ian Happ that he got to see it, that he got to walk through the dark tunnel and see the postseason light at the end of it. So hats off to him.
I, you are so sentimental, and that is such a great point. And I remember listening to Christian Yelich talk about this in Milwaukee's clubhouse and the sentiment of there are guys who will play their whole careers and never have this experience.
Yeah.
So let's be sentimental for a moment and realize, and we're going to talk about this, I know, a little bit later, but these guys are playing this sport. You know this, you played the sport forever. Your whole life is dedicated to this, and you ultimately want to achieve the highest ranks that you can in the sport, which means playing in October and getting to experience something like this and being a part of a winning club and going the whole way in the distance. And there are so many guys who come through Major League Baseball who will never, ever get to pour champagne on their face or their teammates' faces or feel the burn in their eyes and the sting of success. They'll never get to do that. And so you are so spot on for Ian Happ to have this moment for the team that he came up with and having to go through those moments and kind of being like the black sheep, right? You're welcomed, but you weren't included in the cool kids club. You're at the kids table, right? You're baby. And now it's his table.
Yeah, that's so true. So congrats to him. Congrats to the Cubs. Excited to see what they do in October. It looks like them against the Padres. It will be very interesting with.
And at home. At home. Do not underestimate. I know what the Padres are. I love the Padres. I love watching this team play. And the Padres' home field advantage is insane. But they probably have to go to Chicago and play at the friendly confines.
Yeah. Love that. Before we take a break, very quickly, hit a couple of topics here. Let's go around the league. The Cleveland Guardians are alive with the Sound of Music. What in the freaking world is going on over there? The Guards just swept the Tigers in Detroit, including a miraculous defeat of Tarek Skubal again.
Unreal.
The idea that the best pitcher on the planet, like his kryptonite, it relatively, is the light-hitting Cleveland Guardians offense is just very funny to me. The Guards are now 3.5 back in the AL Central. They're 3.5 behind the Tigers with 9 games to play, I believe. And they are only 1.5 back behind Boston in the American League wild card. We've had these teams rise and fall. They're like the Royals got hot and then the Rangers got hot and then they, you know, petered off. And now it's the Guards. As we come down to the wire, it is, and it's always been, the Guards. They are 13-4 in September. They're 12-1 in their last 13 games. The offense still kind of stinks. They're 17th in runs scored this month, 13th in OPS. The rotation is as a 2-2-6 this month.
Yep.
Remember, they were close to trading Stephen Kwan at the deadline.
Yeah.
Right? And they held on to it. And I said at the time, I want the Guardians to be rewarded for that decision. Because I want these small market teams to not, like, this is a larger conversation about the structure of the sport, right?
Yes.
But like, I want the Guardians to keep players like Stephen Kwan to go for it. And they did. They probably went against what the model said, you know, to keep Stephen Kwan.
100%.
And so far they've been rewarded for that. Danny, what's your take on them?
I have two things I want to tell you. I have a good take on them. Number one,
we'll see about that.
I hope you didn't know this fun fact. There are only two teams in the last decade to have a negative run differential and get into the postseason. Mm. Can you name them?
I assume they're both Cleveland teams.
No.
The Orioles. The Orioles, I believe, did this.
No. I'm going to tell you so you don't keep guessing and we do this silly round and round.
The Mariners. The 2022 Mariners.
No.
Is that right? Yeah, it's the 2022 Mariners. I forgot
about that. The 2023 Arizona Diamondbacks and the 2023 Miami Marlins both got in. Negative run differential. Those are the only two teams in the last decade to do it. Okay. Thank you so much to MLB Network and your stats and info department. Number two, the Guardos, AKA the Hardos, keeping Stephen Kwan. I actually talked to him about this when Cleveland came to New York. And I asked him, I was like, how does it feel to have your name floated around in trade rumors and hear it and know that this is the organization you grew up with? And he's like, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so grateful to the Guardians for this opportunity to have drafted me and developed me and my style of play, right? Like, his style fits that organization. He embodies what they are all about. And to hear that your org might be like, see ya, we need other pieces. We can't keep ya. I could imagine that's probably what it feels like growing up in the Rays organization. And they love you and they care for you and then they shove you out.
Or the Padres?
The Padres.
Being a Padres prospect?
Yes. Yes. Good
we
luck.
We believe in you. Yeah,
good
sure.
Good luck with AJ Preller at the helm.
Absolutely.
Right. And so they kept him and he was, all he felt was gratefulness and he was just so happy to still be there. And he's a huge reason. Like, obviously Jose Ramirez is the dude there, right? They look to him, but it's also Stephen Kwan. He's a pillar there. So
absolutely.
I love what they're doing. I will say it'll be miraculous if they can win the division, if they can get into the wild card. Are they better than the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Astros, or the Mariners?
No.
Okay.
No. No, they're not. And I think
but it's a good story.
I think they would maybe say that too. Like, and that's okay. Like, the Guards have a path here now. And they have given us something compelling to follow.
Yes.
Over
thank
the
you.
Last.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Yes.
Two more topics here before we take a break. This, I think, is stupid. Ooh. Shohei Ohtani may be playing the outfield. He got asked, like, hey, Shohei, like, would you play the outfield? And this came up because if he can't be a reliever and DH, like, they would lose the DH spot if he were to, like, come into pitch as a reliever.
Yes.
Not if you play the outfield. He was like, yeah, I'm open to anything. Here's why this isn't going to happen. All right. You're not going to put a dude in the outfield who hasn't played outfield in 5 years in the playoffs. Okay. This is not happening. It's fun to think about. Maybe in the future it'll happen. I think Ohtani will appear in the outfield for the Dodgers at some point in some fashion. It's not happening in the playoffs. He's just going to start game two or game three, and he's going to throw five, and he's going to hit a bunch of home runs. It's fine. Like this.
But I have an important question. I have an important question.
Okay.
He's very intentional. He's very intentional with what he says and who he says it to. Why would he say it? Why would he even bring it up? Why would he float the idea?
Yeah.
Why would he do it?
Because Poe Buddy's nerfed. Okay. No one is right all the time. And he probably just was like, hey, would you do this? And in his mind, he's like, well, I want to be agreeable. Like, I want to show that I'm a team guy because, you know, he is. He's like, yeah, I would do that. I would play the outfield. And so everyone's like, Ohtani, gold glove in center. It's like, let's take a breath. This isn't happening. If it does end up happening, the Dodgers have failed him because he's
themselves. They failed themselves. They really need to put him in right field.
Like, come on.
That's a massive F.
It's not going to happen. Last thing here. Justin Verlander says, I'm not leaving, baby. Jennifer Hudson style. I'm the best man you ever know. There's no way I can ever go. No, 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 no. Justin Verlander, San Francisco Giant, which is still hilarious to me.
Yes.
Is currently 42 years and 211 days old. He will turn 43 next February. This is currently his 20th season. He will play a 21st, he told reporters after a sensational outing on Wednesday against the Arizona Diamondbacks. This year for the Giants, 141 and two-thirds innings with a 3.75 ERA. Respectable as all hell. Yeah. He has been legitimately good in the second half to help propel the Giants back into the playoff picture. Since I just am picking this arbitrarily, we'll do July 23rd. Justin Verlander has a 2.17 ERA. Sure. One in the world. Like, incredible. He is coming back in part because he wants to get to 300 wins. He needs 35 more wins. He's not going to get to 300 wins. And that's okay. Hell yeah, Justin. Play forever, brother.
Keep going, man. Keep going. I mean, listen, I don't know if that helps the Giants or not, but they couldn't even get him a win. How long did it take them to get him a win
it's like
this
months.
Season? That was a part of it, right? Like, you're not going to get it because you're on the Giants, not because you can't get a win. Like, he was doing a good job. Listen, I have a soft spot for these guys. They're just as important. You know, I love rookies. I love the prospects. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I love that part of the game, but the veterans have my heart. That these guys, like, I think about Justin Turner and watching him, even if he's not playing all the time. Like, I enjoy watching those guys who have a part of our past. They have a part of the game that's so long gone, but they carry it with them. Like, I think it's amazing. So good for you, it's Justin Verlander.
Watching Justin Verlander now is how it's like visiting with your grandma and like hearing their stories.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, she's, you know, like you ask someone about like an older person and they'll be like, no, she's still with it.
People can be like, no, what was it like to pitch with Max Scherzer? What was it like being in Detroit? Remember that Justin Verlander? Like,
she's 90. It's like my wife's grandfather. He's 94 and like he still drives. It's like, whoa. No, he's still doing great. It's like, that's Justin Verlander, 42 years old, getting outs for the Giants. Here's the one thing I'll say, Justin. So I think he ended up on the Giants because he got a lot of money. Like, he got 50 mil.
Yeah,
Justin Verlander, I know rich people love money and want more of it.
Okay.
Justin, go sign with the Yankees for less. Go sign with the Dodgers for less. Like, if you're trying to rack up wins, like, go all out.
I like that. I love that.
Let's focus. Let's focus on this.
We have a task at hand. We're lock here in. For you, actually. We're
JV.
Part. Yeah. We're lock part it. Of we're in your we're on your committee, your wins committee.
Yeah.
Yeah, lock committee. It in. It's good.
Let's eat some dubs. All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will do the good, the bad, the ugly, and preview the weekend ahead. Welcome back to the end of this wonderful show we call Baseball Barbacast. The Baseball Barbacast or Baseball Barbacast? Jordan and I have never decided, and we don't particularly care. It is
well,
now
it's
time
not the
for
MLB,
our...
so maybe yeah. You should drop the.
If I ever see anybody being like, the MLB, I'm like, you are not a ball knower.
You don't know ball.
We want a big tent. Like, I'm willing to bring the MLB people in and educate them and have them do the work.
A convention to let them know.
We'll let you know. We want to have you, but we need to change our ways.
Want to bring you
in. It is time. We'll bring you in. Open arms. It is time for my favorite moment of the week. The good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing reminiscent of Dan Ugla. When I was on the document writing out Jake good, Danny good, Jake bad, Danny bad, when I got to write Danny Ugla, which is just Dan Ugla, I was like, hell yes. This is pure. This is what it's all about. And I will begin. I will lead the way. And my good this week is the Mariners challenging and winning the challenge on a shift play. For those of you who did not see this, the Seattle Mariners leading the Kansas City Royals on Thursday afternoon, 1-0, I believe in the eighth inning. There was one out, and Dominic Canzone, not Dominic Calzone, as my phone autocorrects to.
I love that.
I'm hungry. Rolls one over, hits it hard, but a routine out to second baseman Michael Massey throws it to first, two down. And then suddenly, the umps are talking. And it appears that Dan Wilson, Mariners skipper, challenges the shift rule. Michael Massey had the heel of his left foot touching the outfield grass, and under the new MLB shift rules, that is no bueno. That is illegal. And the call was overturned. Canzone was awarded first base and ends up scoring to give the Mariners an insurance run and a big 2-0 victory that kept them tied atop the AL West with the Astros. This is awesome. Now, is it ticky-tacky? Sure. Is it, as I'm sure, like Rex Hudler was on the call for the Royals? I'm sure he called it soft.
Yeah.
Right? Or something like that.
For sure he called it soft.
For sure he called it soft.
Maybe he used another word that's not appropriate.
Yeah, but it's savvy, dude. It's savvy.
Do you want to win or not? Period. Do you want to win the game or not?
I totally agree. And Danny, something that happens to us all the time.
You and me?
We cover games. No, people in our line of work.
Okay.
If you're at Citi Field before the game, what is like the number one thing that a security guard will say to you or me before a game while we're like on the warning track?
Oh, don't step on the grass.
Don't step on the grass. And that's what I have to say to you, Michael Massey. Don't step on the grass, brother. Those are the rules. So kudos to the Mariners and their replay review dude, who I believe is named Andy Bissell or Bissell.
Yeah, Andy, way to go.
It's a big W. This was such a big W that Andy did a scrum after the game with reporters. Where he's like, yeah, I nailed that one. They're like,
I love
baseball.
I love baseball. Sarah Lang's baseball is the best.
The best. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. The Gardos challenged a Carlos Correa play last year. He made like a sweet play coming over the middle when he used to be on the Twins. Remember that? Yeah. I don't.
No. I said, yeah, but
found
I don't.
To have been on the incorrect side of second base when he began the play. Guardians challenged it. I believe the rule has since changed. At the time, it was just a ball, and that bat continues.
Okay.
Now you get first base. So, Michael Massey, stay off the grass.
Stay off the grass. You know what? I just realized this looks crooked. That's why I was distracted by what you were saying. And I'm sorry if you've been watching this whole time and been annoyed. I didn't even notice because I was looking into the camera like you're supposed to do.
Danny.
And I just looked back and I was like, oh my God.
Danny.
Sorry.
Danny, I
digressed. Sorry.
Danny is ADHDing about a not crooked painting behind her. Danny, this is a crooked program. Okay. So we're happy to have crooked art.
My turn?
Your turn. What's good?
Okay. My good is Major League Baseball's rookies. Go, rookies, go. Every single one. Headlining the rookie class with recency bias is Drew Gilbert. I just watched Mookie Betts and Logan Webb on Mookie's podcast, which I do love, by the way. That's another story for another day.
I enjoy Mookie's show, yes.
I enjoy it very much. It's very insightful. And obviously, guys are opening up in awesome ways. And Logan Webb is talking about Drew Gilbert and that he's the same guy no matter where he is. You and I covered him in college. He was with the Tennessee Volunteers under Tony Vitello. I texted Tony about him. I texted their SID about him. And I'm like, look at Drew go. And they're like, look at Chili Goo Bear go. Look at that kid shine. And I'm just so happy he exists. I'm guessing for the other team, it's super annoying, but he's done something for the Giants. And I don't care what you say. Like, it's not that he's just there for show. He's not just there to bite people, right? He's actually good. He can actually play. So he headlines the class. Parker Messick, Cade Horton, Nick Kurtz, Sal Stewart, who was just called up, on and on and on. Jonah Tong, Brandon Sproat, Nolan McLean. There's so many more. I'm forgetting some that are important. You'll remind
Nick
me in
Kurtz,
a second.
Obviously. What I have enjoyed about this season's rookies is that we've gotten them like sprinkled out over the year.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like they all came up in one blast. Now, like, it's like every couple of weeks, it's like, oh, and here's Cade Horton and here's Nick Kurtz. And then we also had like, you know, Drake Baldwin making the team out of camp. And then it's like, hey, at the end of the year, you get a little Jonah Tong as like an appetizer for 2026.
It's a dessert. No, that's a dessert. He's at the end. That's dessert.
Is it the
appetizers?
End? That's true.
Yeah. He's a great dessert.
I will say, Danny, do you know who has been the least valuable rookie? You said, you know, because earlier you said all the rookies are great. Now, that is a very kind way to think about it, but it is effectively.
Because this is my good. This is, it's not
I
that
know.
They've been good. It's that the rookies.
They are good. Yeah.
Are good.
Sure. But I'm asking.
Who? No.
I'll just be transitioned to bad.
Fine.
So one rookie stands above, I guess, below the rest.
And
this is unfortunate. And it is Jack Caglione. Jack Caglione has not done it. He has been worth negative 1.3 wins above replacement. Now, I would imagine some of that is because he's playing in the outfield where he is not very good.
He's not. He's
he is
not
also
an
not hit. He has a 40 WRC plus. He will need to make some adjustments this winter, but that is not my bad.
Oh,
it's not my bad.
What's your bad?
My bad is the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah.
Firing their pro scouts. Now, this is a little inside baseball and maybe
it's
something
good,
that
bad.
Fans don't need to care about. However, the Minnesota Twins eliminated four of the five members of their pro scouting staff. This was first reported by Dan Hayes of The Athletic. Now, here's why this is bad. This has been trending in this direction over the years. There have been other stories coming out about various teams reducing their in-person scouting, particularly on the pro side. Quick aside, there is pro and amateur scouting. Pro scouting is you scout minor leaguers that you want to trade for or find on waivers or whatever. Amateur scouting is going to look at high school, college, international players, right? I would say that over the last couple of years, amateur side has kind of maintained itself more than the pro side because of the data that's available at the minor league level. You could just boot up any video of any minor league player and know how hard they're hitting the ball, et cetera, et cetera. But now there's a ton of value still in regards to seeing players in person, and some of the best teams that even are cheap, like the, you know how many pro scouts the Rays have? They have like an army, and that's how they keep unearthing dudes like Randy Arozarena that they, you know, get in a deal in the upper minors. They're really good at that. And for the Twins to reduce this department to one human being and be like, hey, you have the minors, you cover the all of the minors, you scout all of them. Hey, who do you cover? I cover the minors. that sucks. And the idea that this is being presented in like as a cost-cutting measure is preposterous to me because it doesn't cost anything. Like, this is not a big expense in the grand scheme of things. And for the Twins to do this is really disappointing. And it's really disappointing for a team that needs pro scouts right now. Like,
question mark.
Now, there are certain contending teams that don't have a lot of, like the Braves don't have a lot of pro scouts because they're very rarely trading for minor leaguers, right?
Yeah.
They're like, I'm sending you a minor leaguer in exchange for a big leaguer at the deadline. the Twins are not in that situation. Like, they need these guys, and this is just a bummer, and it is unequivocally bad.
I'm not going to go scorched earth because I have a long day today, and I can't start my day that way, but I will say two things. It's not just disappointing. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to the sport. It's embarrassing to your organization and to the people who are the backbone. Your favorite player was found by a pro scout. Your favorite player that you love watching. Think about it right now. I'll give you 2 seconds. One, two. That's the people who found them. And number two is a computer cannot tell you that a kid is good, that a kid cleaned up the dugout and got rid of all the trash while his other teammates ran to the bus or ran to their parents. And that kid stayed longer to clean up like a Bobby Witt Jr.
That stuff matters.
Who did things. That stuff matters. You know why I know it matters? Is because scouts ask me all the time. All the time. Is he a good kid?
Good guy?
Good guy? How was that conversation? I saw you talking to him.
Is he a schmuck? That's,
they want to know. They want to know. And they're the fabric of the entire sport.
I agree.
So I'm embarrassed and I'm sad and I hope the Twins course correct.
Go Twins, go. Danny, what's bad for you besides that, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to stay on the same line. Let's make sure we get this right. So Jeff Passan, our friend Jeff Passan, and others reporting this earlier this week that Major League Baseball, and they've been working on this. This is not something that just came out of nowhere, but they've been working on this along the lines of when it comes to watching amateurs play. Maybe not a coincidence that these two things happened at the same time, now that I'm thinking out loud, is that Major League Baseball is going to ban team officials from watching amateur players or collecting video and data on them for an extended period of time during the winter, saying that year-round play is, quote, putting young players at a dramatic risk of future injury. So I put this in the bad column because I actually think this should have been done a long time ago, and that now all of a sudden you think that you're going to be able to reverse course at this time. I think that the most successful big leaguers played multiple sports for as long as they could. The most successful athletes who play this sport were able to go out and do other things. I talk to young kids. I talk to these guys. They're tired. They're burnt out. The summer circuit is way too long. In the last 6 or 7 years, it's changed so dramatically. And these guys have no time to do anything else. They're not pros yet. They shouldn't be doing that. And so I do like the idea that there's going to be a dark period. I hate it's bad because I feel like it took way too long to get to this point. I also think blaming it on amateurs playing year round and not what else is happening at the big league level, like the pitch clock exhausting our pitchers, isn't the only solution here. But I do appreciate the fact that it's finally being brought up. This is too late. We've waited way too long to do this. I guess I'm glad that it's here finally. What's your take on this?
My take is I think amateur players need more opportunities to play low-stakes baseball.
Okay, tell me more.
I think on the circuit, every at-bat feels like the world. There's always someone watching. Everything is important. And you don't get to just like play to win. I think that's what college does provide in some ways. As far as like health goes, I do think limiting the amount of time you're throwing is a good thing. I think that if you don't put in guardrails, scouts will just keep watching. I do not think that this restriction will stop anything at all. Like, I don't know how they're going to enforce this, but whatever. Go off, guys. My UGLA is also related to amateur baseball. I like Vanderbilt University's team. I like their head coach, Tim Corbin.
Same.
A legend.
Corpse.
In the field. Legend. This is weird as hell. This was a tweet from Joey Dwyer, who covers Vanderbilt for Vandy on SI. It is a picture of Vanderbilt slugger Braden Holcomb, who is very good.
Love Braden. Yeah, great kid.
Braden is in the middle of doing what appears to be a small scrum after a fall practice. I love that in the background, there is a Jimmy John's lunch box that you can see if you zoom in, because it is college baseball after all. Now, the notable thing is what Braden is wearing. He is wearing a black hat with a white front and no logo, the type that looks like you got at Walmart when you needed a hat. He's wearing a shirt, a white shirt with the number 26 on the front. It looks kind of like a football jersey. At nowhere does it appear that there is a Vanderbilt logo, and that is true. Dwyer tweets, Tim Corbett is making Vanderbilt players earn the logo. No logo on training shirts or hats. I like you, Tim Corbin. This is eye-washy as hell. Okay. And it looks weird. And the way that Holcomb is standing with his hands behind his back bent down, he kind of looks like a prisoner. In this, like, let the kids wear the logo. Like, is this doing anything? Is this really doing anything?
I feel as though, because this went around to a couple of group chats, I have a feeling that you and I are, yes, in similar type group chats here. And I think in college, there's always a gimmick in fall. There's a slogan. There's a book. There's a movie. They love a gimmick. They love a gimmick. Oh, they love, let's bring the kids in. Let them lean in to something that is meaningful. And I love it. I'm here for that because these are young kids. And sometimes they need something to look up to. And sometimes we go too far. We're trying too hard because here's the thing is Tim Corbin and his staff, they are trying to relate to this next generation of kids and the next generation of kids. And I'm guessing he went to a conference or talked to another coach or has a list of fall ideas. And this is one that's been on the list is earning the logo. And I love Tim Corbin. I love college baseball. But I feel and I fear that we've tried too hard.
This is too much. This is goofy as hell. Maybe it works and they're the best team in college baseball. They were the number one seed last year.
Yeah.
And you flamed out in embarrassing
maybe
fashion.
Maybe they had a choice. Maybe the team agreed.
The team did it. We got to earn this.
They might. Yeah. We don't know. Joey Dwyer, let us know.
I think they should have an alternate uniform that they play in. That's this. These are the new home
during
whites.
During the regular season. Yeah.
These are the home whites.
Okay.
It's an extension. It is an extension of the scene in Miracle where it's like, you play for the name on the front, not the name on the back. You know, you don't have enough talent to rely on talent alone. That's what I tell myself every morning.
So Danny, why don't they just take the names off the back? My Ugla, you helped me on this. I'm not even going to pretend like I really struggled with this one because I wanted it to be so great. You tipped me off to this. So there's an amazing photo on social media. Crossing Broad, at Crossing Broad, shared this. It was from Philly Captain. I mean, we love Philly. I love the social media that comes out of Philly and their teams. I think that it is off. It is bananas. And Trey Turner on the field, trying to take grounders while the crew behind him is setting up for a Lumineers concert. And it is so, like, first of all, like, the idea that Trey Turner, who's one of the best players in the game, is on a field that's half tarped. The only part that's open is second base to third base. That's all that's open. Even, actually, he's probably lost some of that space because he's just trying to get his work in.
He can't make a play over the middle. Like, any grounder up the middle, he's going to run on the tarp.
He can't move to his left because there's a tarp on the field because the Lumineers have to get ready for their concert. And that is so, I'm sad. It's sad, Trey Turner. That's sad. Like, that guy deserves better. And especially Lumineers. Like, that doesn't feel like even music that Trey Turner likes or would listen to. I don't know Trey.
No chance.
There's just no way.
No chance.
So it's just a combo that it makes you cringe. And you picked a great one. Thank you for letting me have this one.
What'd
you think?
Lumineers are solid.
Yeah, they're
solid.
Yeah, we like them.
I would go see him for free. I don't know if I'd pay. You know, what is so funny about this is just the idea that, like, hey Trey, like, can you imagine Trey Turner's face when he was told, like, yeah, you can't use second base today. You can't work on double play turns because the Lumineers need to sing "Hey Ho."
I can picture his face right now.
Ophelia.
Ho hey.
If this ho hey hey ho hey yo. If this bums you out, Trey Turner, you know what you can do? You can listen to Lumineers. All right, let's very quickly preview the weekend ahead before we say goodbye.
Okay.
We got the big one. The big one is Mariners at Astros.
Yes, it is.
Battle for the AL West. All three games are happening in Houston. The Astros just swept the Rangers, effectively kicking them out of the postseason field. Good for them. That is going to be fun to watch. I would say Kershaw tonight against the Giants.
Must-see TV. Cool. Yes.
Must-see TV. And also, like, the Dodgers can just kill off the Giants here. And create some more distance in the NL West. They are currently 3 games up, I believe, on the San Diego Padres. You have the Jays in Kansas City. They could clinch a playoff spot this weekend. Their magic number is 2. I'm interested in Braves at Tigers. The Braves are sneaky hot right now. Granted, they just mopped the poo-poo Nats. Matt Olson is on absolute fire. And the Tigers need to get some wins here, unless the Guardians keep it going. They are in Minnesota to play the Twins.
Ooh.
Seems like an easy slate. However, they will face both Pablo Lopez and Joe Ryan.
Joe Ryan. This weekend. What a dog.
Apparently, the Guardians can win without scoring runs, so that doesn't matter. The Mets are home against the Nats. They can put the NL wildcard third spot to bed, create a little more distance there. That'd be huge for them. And then the last one, Danny.
Yeah?
Angels at Rockies. If you bad, you'll watch they bad. The Rockies need one more win to surpass last year's White Sox team.
Okay.
They just swept at home by the Marlins. This is it. Like, if you can't beat the Angels at home, then sorry.
Did you see the Sam Blum tweet, by the way, about the Angels? I think it actually came from last week, and he was talking about how sad this team was. And when he tweeted it out, I realized that we will effectively, I feel it's safe to say this, like you're calling races. You feel like you can call some teams that are, you could say goodbye to them. I feel like we could potentially, maybe this is dramatic, say goodbye to ever seeing Mike Trout play postseason baseball again.
Jeez, thanks for finishing that. Thanks for finishing the show with on a high note.
No, we're going to end on a high note. We are going to end on a high note, but I just wanted to point that out. I think we got to call a spade a spade. Is that too dramatic?
I mean, yeah. No. Yeah? I don't know, Danny. I don't want to think about this. It's early in the morning still for me.
It is early for you, even though we're both on the East Coast.
I'm an early riser. That's not true.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Why?
Danny, I'm kicking you out. Promote what you do. Tell where people can find you talking for a living, please.
If you have a SiriusXM subscription or if you want one, you can get a 3-month trial. You have one. I'm on Sirius a lot, actually, this coming week. Sunday, 1 to 4 Eastern, Monday and Tuesday, 10 to 1 Eastern on Power Alley. And that's it for now.
Okay. Men's College World Series next year.
Yeah.
We want pitchers, SNY. Not belly itchers. Thank you to Ingrid Rosas and TJ Brasil for producing the show. Thank you to Jordan Schusterman. I don't know what you're up to, but I'm sure you're having a good time. And thank you to you, Danny, for joining me on this episode. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Everybody have a lovely weekend.